Hey there, Quajo here, and if you haven't heard my voice, I'm the new host of the Art of Online Business. Quick update on my new offer. I did not expect the initial launch spots to sell out so fast. I'm talking about Facebook Ad Setup to Success, which is one-on-one Facebook ads coaching for the driven course creator from me, three Zoom calls within a month, and unlimited support in between so that you can run your lead generation campaigns, your launch campaigns, your SLO, self-liquidating offer funnels, exactly like I would, getting all my tips and tricks and strategies, plus just unlimited support inside of Slack or Voxer, or one lady's even doing it from inside of Messenger, with screen recordings, Loom recordings, this sort of thing, questions. This is what I'm doing, but all those limited spots at the initial launch price, they are gone. And I just wanted to explain that out of integrity to the people who took those first spots. The price has gone up, and there's one spot, maybe two, if I do some scheduling jujitsu for May. Otherwise, we're booking into June. You can click on the link in the description below to find out more, or you can go to theartofonlinebusiness.com/call if you need that kind of one-on-one Facebook help. All right, back to the episode.
This is the show where I bring you the best tips, tactics, and strategies for using paid traffic to grow your business on autopilot. You also hear what's working and not working right now from the top minds in online marketing so that you can get more leads and sales every day without having to empty your wallet in the process. All right, let's jump into it. Hey, what is up, everyone? Welcome back to the Art of Paid Traffic podcast. I am your host, Rick Mulready. Really appreciate you for giving me your time today. Hope all's going well, whatever you're up to today. This is episode number 160, and I am super pumped today to welcome my buddy Noah Kagan to the podcast. For those of you who don't know who Noah is, he was employee number 30 at Facebook. He was also an early employee at Mint.com as their director of marketing, and he's also the founder of AppSumo and SumoMe. He's also a fellow podcaster. He's got a show called Noah Kagan Presents, which we talk about here in the show today. And he's got a website called okdork.com, which he regularly puts some really meaty articles on there that are all really actionable. I love reading the stuff over at his site. And with Noah today, we dive into a bunch of different topics, including why he's no longer getting $1 cost per email signups from his Facebook ads and what he's now getting instead. We talk about how he feels about Facebook ads right now, and his viewpoint, I have a feeling, is going to surprise you. It's a little bit different than what we talk about normally here on the show today and the opportunity that exists. And so we get into what he's feeling about Facebook ads right now. We talk about why looking for the 20% of marketing opportunities is so important for growing your business. We dive into how to create a simple marketing plan for your business. Noah does something really, I mean, does a lot of things amazingly well, but I love how he talks about really simplifying and breaking down a marketing plan for your business and really doubling down on what is working and staying away from what's not working. So we break down what that means for you today. We talk about how Noah repurposes content right now in his business. We get into what a proactive dashboard is and how to use leading indicator goals to empower your team and grow your business. That was a topic that I was kind of selfishly really excited about talking to him about. And so we dive into that and about three quarters of the way through the interview, and then a whole lot more. As you can see, we tackle a bunch of different topics, and I really hope you like this sort of overarching conversation that I have with Noah today. Just a heads up, there is a little bit of cursing toward the end of the interview. So if you are listening to the show here with young ears around, you may want to plug in those earbuds. Before we do jump into it with Noah, though, if you're looking for hands-on help with your Facebook ads, you are going to want to join me for my FBA Live event here in San Diego, December 7th, 8th, and 9th. FBA Live is my implementation workshop. I do this twice a year, and we will be actually working on your Facebook ad campaigns together, over the 2 days, 8th and 9th, because the 7th is an opening night happy hour. And also during that time, we're going to be having conversations about strategy and areas for improvement for your campaigns. So much has changed with Facebook ads over the last 2 months, right? Let alone this year. And so my goal is to have you walking away with things set up the right way and improvements made. If you're already running Facebook ads right now, I want you walking away with suggestions and improvements for how to make your campaigns better so that you're getting better results and really taking advantage of the platform the way it is right now. Also, something new I'm doing for this December workshop. When you sign up for the workshop, it's also going to include access to one of my training programs, which you will need to go through as much as possible prior to the event. And the reason I'm doing this is I want this workshop to have the biggest impact for you. And so for that reason, it's not going to be for complete beginners. If you're already one of my students, you are going to get a big time discount off the cost of the workshop or get to come for free. And so again, so that we can have the biggest impact on working with you, I'm limiting spots to just 40 people. And at this time I'm recording this, half the spots are already filled. So the link to go to get all the details and to reserve your spot is rickmulready.com/FBA live. rickmulready.com/FBA live. I love doing these workshops. This is something that I said to myself 4 years ago after I did my very first live workshop in Boston. I was traveling, decided to do a live workshop at some random co-working space in Boston. Three people showed up and it was amazing. And I decided from that point forward that I was going to be incorporating live events into my business. I love hanging out with you. I love being able to help you in person. So I'm really looking forward to moving your Facebook ads and your business forward here in San Diego in December. Again, that link is rickmulready.com/FBA live. All right, without further ado, my friends, let's go hang out with Noah Kagan.
Well, as I was saying for you, I noticed in our society, we don't like saying that life is great. I feel like all of us have to like downplay things going well. It's like, hey, life's great, but you know, obviously this is happening too. I'm like, why can't life just be great? And I'm not one of these like gratitude is your attitude or you have to meditate so you can levitate. Wow, that's pretty good actually. I'm not one of these like frou-frou people.
Yeah.
But if you actually like look objectively or stand outside of your life and if you evaluate it, you're like, most of life is really great. If you have like an internet connection and most of the food you need and you've got a few good friends, like life overall is solid. I think there's generally like three aspects of your life. There's like your relationships, there's yourself, and then there's your work. Mm-hmm. And if so, and you can kind of tell like, all right, well, work is off or whatever one's off. And then what do you want to do about it? And so for me, work hasn't been horrible. I think it's more clarity and alignment. Alignment's been one of my new favorite words this year, mm-hmm. which is just like, are things aligned for where you want to go? And are the yep. people you're working with, are you aligned with them about what you need to have happen?
Yep.
And I feel like we're like with our business with sumo.com, for instance, I feel like we're getting this like insane alignment as a company towards helping certain e-commerce customers. And I'm just like, yes, I can't wait. And it's like, I feel excited about that.
Is that different than what it's been in the past for you? I mean, obviously, there's been certainly times where you felt this, but is this sort of something that's like rejuvenated in you over the past, like, I don't know, a few months or something? Or what? Is there something that has, I mean, you're aligned with where you're heading, you're super excited about what's going on. Has it been not that way necessarily this year? I mean, here we are, middle of October, you know, so.
You know, sometimes I do worry that other people I work with are going to listen to this and be like, wow, Noah's a dick, or Noah's, you know, because I also, right. I help represent the company and I help lead a sure. company, and so I don't want them to take anything negatively or like Noah's doubting, so we're doubting. But I'll say, you know, all of us are human and we all have different things. So I think on one hand, as a leader of a business or a company, you have to like sometimes keep it out of the office.
Yep. Sure.
Unfortunately, keep it out of the office. Keep it out of Slack. Like if you're negative, anybody else around you in your business is likely to be negative. So let me preface it with that. But I would say what's been interesting with our company is it's been one of our harder years in 7 years.
Mm.
You know, in a straight, like in terms of our growth, in terms of our effectiveness, in terms of our relationships. And I think finally we sat down and took some hard looks about like, why is this not working out? Why are like my partner and I not getting along like we always have? He's one of my best friends.
Yeah.
And what the hell are we doing about it? And so today, literally, we wrote out the future of our relationship. And I was like, so we, you know, we worked out the relation, the future of sumo.com, and then we worked out the exact relationship that we want to have and what the timeline is of that. And I'm just like, yes, yes. Like, we're all getting what we want. The company's going where we want it to go, and we're getting on the same page. We're getting that alignment. And so that's where I'm feeling good today.
Were you like, why didn't we do this sooner? And like, you know, has it been this way for a little while? And you're like, man, I wish we'd done this sooner. Or were you like, you know what? This, it happened when it's supposed to. And you know, at least it happened today.
As humans, we justify everything. My brother is like an expert in this. He, wherever city he moves, he's like, this is the best city in the world.
Okay.
So he moved to like Eugene, Oregon, the best. And then he moved to Gilbert, Arizona, the best. And then he's now in Albuquerque, New Mexico, the best. I mean, Albuquerque is the meth capital of the world.
Right.
And I'm just like, but what I think you have to do is look, someone said this, and can I tell you a quick story?
Yeah, for sure.
All right. I'll tell you a story of how to look at all this. It's a Chinese fable about the man and his horse.
Okay.
It's something in Chinese, like, wow, shu lo lo. I don't know how to exactly say it, but like the man and his horse. So there's a man and his horse, and his horse is sick, and everyone else in his town goes to war. And he goes to father. He goes, oh, father, this is a curse. My horse is sick, and now I'm not a man, and the whole town has less respect for me because I'm not going to war. And everyone in the war, a week later, dies. Every single person in war dies. And he goes to his father and he says, oh, man, what a blessing. Because the horse was sick, now I'm alive. And the father says, well, it sounds like a blessing, but maybe it's a curse. Hmm. And the guy goes, okay. And now, because he's the only man left in town, he becomes the mayor. And he gets to make all these decisions. And he goes to his father. He says, father, I'm the mayor. What a great blessing. This is amazing. And the father goes, it's a blessing, but maybe it's a curse. And then a week later, he's mayor and he's running the town. But these bandits come to town. They say, who's in charge here? And they end up stabbing him. And he's like, oh, and he goes to his father. He says, father, this is such a curse. You know, it's so horrible. I got shanked. And the father says, you know, maybe it's a blessing. And it's like, I feel like I got to do it in my Jewish voice. So the next week he's in the hospital because he just got shanked, and he ends up falling in love with this nurse. And he goes to his father. He says, father, what a blessing. I've got this nurse. I'm in love now. Father says, yeah, you know, maybe it's a curse. So anyways, the whole point of this story is that in every instance, there's a blessing and then there's a curse.
Yep.
And so I made up that whole story, by the way.
Did you really?
Yeah.
Did you make it up as you were going along?
Yes.
That's pretty good.
Yes. Yeah.
That was so quick, man.
So you can do it too. So whenever you tell someone the story of the man and his horse, which is a true fable in Chinese lore,
yep.
But you make up how it progresses.
Okay.
I think that the real takeaway in everything we do in life and business, and the thing that's really impacted me, and I just heard it a few months ago, and I just can't let it go, because I think when things are good, we're just like, oh, everything's always great. And I don't think you should look for the bad. But the more important part of the story for me is when things are bad, like I just got stabbed or I didn't get a go with my horse. What's the blessing in that moment?
Mm.
Not that you have that. So I think there's a real powerful message where, like, when things are tough, which is inevitable, where is the blessing in that curse? And where is the opportunity to learn and grow? That's where it is with me with this year. It's like, would I like to go back and change it? Yeah. But with all this, I think it's made us, in this curse or in this challenge, it's made us stronger for the future.
I love that. And I'm impressed that you made that up as you went along. But it completely makes sense. It hits home. I think anytime we can tell a story like that to paint a picture and to drive a point home, it's always more powerful. Now, we kind of jumped right into it here. And you mentioned, you know, during that, what you were saying there as far as your businesses go, there are a few people, a few listeners who don't necessarily know who you are and your background. And I've just talked about it in the intro here, but can you share sort of in your own words, you know, who you are, your background, and what you're up to these days?
Yeah. You know, all of us have some super skill or superpower, whether you realize it or not. And if you don't know it, just text your best friend and say, hey, what do you think my superpower is? And they'll tell you it. And so my superpower in my career is that I am a promoter. And so what I've done in my career is found things that I've wanted to promote and gotten involved with them. And my recent company that I helped start a few years ago was AppSumo, where we literally promote products that we like, and we promote small business products. So like a Groupon for Geeks, and I literally get paid to go find amazing products. And now the team does it and we promote it. And so sumo.com is our latest business, which we give people the tools to promote themselves. So really around growing your own email list and marketing. And that's where our business is now.
Nice. And you've grown, I mean, these businesses have obviously grown really, really quickly. You've built a team, you know, down there. You're based out of Austin. You built a team. Are you all based in Austin, by the way? Or do you have any virtual team members?
Yeah, so we've evolved over years. And to give some context, because sometimes it helps, and I'm not, this is not bragging. I just want to give people like the size of it. I think there's around 60 of us, and it's a pretty healthy eight-figure business overall.
Yeah.
And so we originally started out just me and virtual. Well, I guess not virtual, it's just me. And then we were all virtual, and then we were all in the office, and now we're a hybrid. Okay. So about 85% are in Austin, Texas, 15% are all over the world, and then most of them will fly in once every 3 months.
Okay.
And then twice a year we'll do retreats. So this year was we did one actually in Texas, but last year we did Chicago. And at the end of the year, we'll retreat to Mexico, or this year we're going somewhere else, which I can't announce yet because we haven't told the team.
Okay. All right. We won't tell anybody.
No, I just love surprise. One thing that I like? I love surprises in life.
Yeah.
I hate surprises in business.
Yes.
Like, hey, Noah, I quit. Or, hey, Noah, we spent more money on this than we thought. I'm like, I don't want that surprise.
Right, I don't like
surprise. My lawyers, I hate my lawyers. Why? Because every bill is a surprise.
Yeah.
It's exactly. Like, oh, guess what? This month it's $1,000. I'm like, what did you do?
Right.
Anyways.
Right. Surprise in life, good. Surprise in business, bad. You were at Facebook very early on. And I definitely want to talk about, you know, some Facebook advertising here today. With you, obviously being at one of the very, very early employees at Facebook, you saw what was going on the ad platform. I mean, very early on, and it's evolved like, you know, 100 times over since then.
Insane.
Over the past 2 weeks, it's evolved. But I know that you still do a lot of Facebook ads. I know you have somebody on your team that handles your Facebook ads. I know that they have to spend a certain amount of money per week on, you know, ad campaigns, and certainly, you know, testing different things out. I have a note here that you were getting around a dollar cost per lead on your sign up. Are you still doing that?
No.
Where are you at now? And before we even get into like sort of the strategy, like what you're doing, where are you at now? Because one of the questions I'm getting, people are freaking out. They're like, holy cow, my costs are going up, you know? And it's like, yeah, they've been going up for the past couple of years. And especially this time of year, I mean, not only are we having, you know, the competition on the platform is so much greater than it's always been, but now we're in the holiday season, you know, a couple more weeks and it's game on for holidays. So costs are going to go up even more. What are you seeing on your side from that standpoint?
So a few things. One, the dollar, and what I've realized for a lot of people that are buying traffic, I think you have to understand your overall cost. So you might be doing retargeting, but is that because they came from an original ad, which means your actual cost is going to be a lot higher. For me, what I've noticed, my cost. So on my personal OKDork.com mailing list, a subscriber is generally costing me around $4.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And there's not a ton of, I'll talk about strategies in general, and I can tell you exact opportunities. And then on Sumo.com, which is our software product, we focus more on an email or a registration, which has been varied from $5 to $20.
Gotcha.
And that's to get someone to actually register. That doesn't mean that they activate. That doesn't mean they become a customer. That's where like it gets very expensive.
Yeah. But the thing about with that with you is that you do know those numbers. You know the cost to get, you know, to not only to get them in the door, but also the value. And you know how many people you have to get in the door, which, you know, the percentage of those people then turns into paying customers and so forth. And I mean, the evolution of the Facebook platform, especially over the past 6 months, has really come to what we're talking about here with that is like, you really need to know your numbers. You really need to know the value because, you know, the algorithm has gotten so smart and you can optimize for the value and stuff like that. But I think like, I'm glad to hear you say that here on the show that you're like looking at anywhere between $5 and $20 because some people are thinking, I'm sure they're listening going, holy cow, like, really? Like, oh, these numbers that I'm seeing aren't that bad. You know, the days of a dollar or 50 cent cost per lead, granted, they're certainly still happening with people.
Yes.
Are probably over, you know?
So I think that's actually, I agree with you. And what I think people need to do, so how I've been successful in marketing or how it's worked for AppSumo.com or with Sumo.com or even at Mint.com is that the opportunity comes not when you're playing in a marketplace.
What do you mean by that?
So the reason why is Facebook expensive? It's because everyone is advertising on Facebook.
Yep.
Okay. So where, like, here's an example. This is really interesting. On Facebook for sumo.com or for, like, you know, okdort.com or my YouTube channel, I'm paying like $1 a click.
Mm-hmm.
And then so you have to go and say, well, one, who is not advertising, right? That is an opportunity. So are there WordPress plugins you can advertise on? Are there blogs you can advertise on? Can you sponsor clicks on Instagram people directly? And so, for example, I posted on LinkedIn in the status update, blah, 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 here's a link. And I was like, okay, whatever, who cares? And I got 600 clicks. And that may not seem like a lot, but if you're buying Facebook ads,
yeah,
600 clicks, $1.25 CPC or whatever your cost per click is,
right,
that's a $700 return, like $700 in click value I just got from one post that took me a few minutes. And, well, Noah's got a following, besides the point. The point is that what I'd like to do is I spend a lot of my time on the core stuff that has been working, but the opportunity comes in that like 20% experimentation stuff. So for me, it was like Quora, LinkedIn, even crazier strategies on Facebook, but your real growth and the success of it,
yep,
is not going to be coming doing it like in the marketplace. That's what I look. So I've always looked, yep, for, like with Mint.com, I went and sponsored personal finance bloggers directly. Mm. And that's how, for $500 a month, I got insane results.
Yep.
Or we met at FinCon.
Yep.
I sponsored FinCon for $1,000. I hope PT doesn't mind. For $1,000.
Oh, really?
This is a few years ago.
Yeah,
he's not,
yeah.
Now it's like, now he's like, he doesn't even talk to me anymore. He won't even respond to my text messages.
Wait, $1,000. Like, I want to do it again.
Exactly. No, well, I sponsored for $1,000 and he went and promoted me to the list, and it drove me tons of clicks.
Yeah.
Why? Because it wasn't something he ever did before.
Yeah.
And so I just want to encourage people is that your opportunity is not going to come going to Facebook where you're going to compete against, you know, I think between AppSumo and Sumo, we're somewhere on the range of 3 to 4,000 a day.
Okay. And spend.
And now we're like, yeah, a day and spend. And we're nothing. You realize that, like, they don't even give us a personal account anymore. Like, we don't have an account manager. We're small.
At 3 to 4K a day. Yeah.
I'm just saying to give you an idea. So, like, now think about Coca-Cola or Amazon or eBay or any of these guys.
Yeah.
So you have to go to these new channels and new opportunities. So are there conferences you can go sponsor? Maybe meetup groups is your opportunity. Maybe there's still something left on Reddit. Like, not as many people are spending a shit ton of money on Reddit, but you have a lot of traffic and very targeted geo categories or interest categories.
Yep.
So my whole point, I'm gonna try to do the Facebook thing, but commit 20% of your budget to just crazy shit.
Yeah. I like that. Now, when you are doing stuff on Facebook, what are some of the things that you're doing that you are seeing that's successful?
Not much, to be honest. So
really?
Number one, a lot of people are talking about chatbot.
Yeah.
If you actually look at what your cost per chatbot is, it's really high. And people are like, I got it for $1. It's like, probably not.
Mm-hmm.
Here's the other thing with this chatbot thing. What happened when you built up your Facebook page? Now you have 1,000 or 10,000 Facebook people. And yes, oh, wow, I have to pay more money to even retarget these people that I've already paid to get. And I have to let Facebook choose if I can see them or not. So I don't really like the idea of building up a chatbot that Facebook is going to say, oh, yeah, you want to talk to them? Now you have to pay again.
Right.
That seems crazy town.
Mm-hmm.
In Facebook, I'm not seeing on our side a ton of results.
Okay.
AppSumo is having a lot of success because it's like a direct purchase. It's like, if there's some urgency, like with AppSumo, it's like, hey, there's a day to buy this product.
Yeah.
That actually works really well. So yeah. I'd say if you're doing ads, is there any time frame you're doing? The second one, this is an experiment, but there's something really crazy about it and it's working kind of well. It's actually working really well. We're giving an incentive. If you buy something from us, we give you a $25 Amazon gift card.
Oh, really? Interesting.
So,
okay.
At the end of the day, and so we did it, and I was like, well, what's our cost per customer? And it was like $7. Our normal cost to a paying customer was like $200.
Okay.
And I'm like, okay, something's weird.
Right.
So point being is that may not work long term, but I think you have to, if you're doing to go play in these marketplaces and it's already tapped,
yeah,
you can't win playing the same game as everyone else.
Yeah. I know that you have your Facebook ads person. I'm sure, I don't know what else they're doing, but that person who is responsible for your Facebook ads, you correct me if I'm wrong, but they have a certain budget that, like, there's a goal they have to hit every week, right? And part of that, if I'm not mistaken, is they need to experiment with some different things. Is that all within Facebook, or are we talking about that 20% like you're talking about and looking at other platforms, other avenues where maybe kind of untapped resources?
right now with sumo.com and AppSumo, it's still within Facebook. But yeah, when it was just me doing it, yes, I think you should actually spend almost the majority of time not doing the Facebook one. Facebook and Twitter and these guys and Google have scale and it's great.
Yep.
But the ROI is going to be a lot harder. So I would spend my time on Reddit. I would spend my time sponsoring direct. I would just try anything that there's already people on. Like, are there directories? Are there newsletters? Like, are there anybody who's got a blog? Yep. I mean, there's just a lot of different angles where I think that you'll actually get a better return. So like one thing that we did just as an idea. So it's at the end of the day, it's money and a return. That's what you have.
Yeah.
And it's choosing where to, so should you hire? And I think what people have to think about is that what's the goal I want? And is it better to hire someone instead? Is it better to just, you know, someone said this to me recently and I really liked it. It's like, look, when you stop spending money on your Facebook ads, it goes away. But let's say you took that $2,000 and paid someone to write a blog post. There's a theoretical chance that $2,000 can drive way more customers. Just they'll take a little bit longer over a similar, you know, over a longer period of time. But you always have that article. And I was like, it's kind of interesting because that you always the garden keeps paying for itself.
Sure.
Another extreme example we did was like I bought WordPress plugins about 2 years ago. So I could either spend money on ads or I bought these plugins, updated them and put our links in them. And then people actually came and found out about sumo.com through that. And that was a huge way that we got a lot of people finding out about us.
What are some different ways that like, so again, people, I can sort of hear people listening right now and saying, okay, well, no one knows where to look for these types of things. I think these are great ideas, but what would you say to somebody who's like, all right, you know, where would I kind of look for these other opportunities that would, might be relevant for my business?
Who's like, give me a business, like give me someone specific.
I mean people who are, our listeners are all over the board, you know, local businesses, online businesses, people who are just starting out with their advertising and growing their business to, you know, a lot more, you know, let's just say local yoga studio.
I love it.
Yeah.
Love it. Oh, namaste. Come on, Rick. You know, I love that stuff.
I teed you up on that one, not completely unintentionally.
Okay. So if I was a local yoga studio, what most people will give advice for is like, go on Yelp and buy their sponsored listing.
Yeah.
At the end of the day, I'm like, I don't know how many people actually like good restaurants or good yoga places do that. So from a paid, is my only tactic paid traffic?
No, not necessarily.
I think that's the thing that people have to consider is that with that same amount of money, to have an outcome of a certain amount of customers, what are the other alternatives? So number one, could you partner with a juice place and give them money to say, hey, go to my yoga place, right? Yep. So kind of do a complimentary promotion.
Yep.
I think another thing is, could you give away your thing for free? Like, so, I mean, they already do the free classes. I'm trying to think of other things I would sponsor meetups. One thing you can do as a yoga studio as well is you can host things. So pay someone who's well known to host events there or get them to host their events there.
Yep.
I think the overall part that I like to do, here's how I'll just bring it up right now. I'll send you a screenshot of it.
Okay.
The way that I've done this is that we do a thing called a proactive dashboard.
Yes. That's on my list to talk to you about.
Okay. And this is how people will say, well, how do I find the new opportunities? The way we do, I don't hope for it. I told you I don't like surprise. I don't like surprises and I don't like hope.
Yep.
So we do a proactive dashboard. So each week, let's take David, for instance. David is responsible for doing 2 email marketing tests on my website on okdork.com.
Okay.
And we do the same thing for sumo.com. It's the same exact formula.
Yep.
And so he is responsible each week for doing 2 tests. And so the thing I would encourage everyone is you have to make it a habit each week and be accountable. So every week I'm going to go look for 1 new place. So let me give you even more one related to traffic. Each week, Dean, he's a full-time promotions person.
Mm-hmm.
He's got to spend, I'll just tell you what he has to do. He has to spend $2,500 a week in Facebook ads. He's got to post once on Quora, twice. He's got to send me podcast emails and he's got to do 5 posts on LinkedIn with me. And that is because and every week we may add more to this and we'll probably add another experiment. Like he used to do Pinterest.
Yeah.
And he used to do 10 on Quora. And the biggest point is that like make it part of your process that each week you're experimenting, seeing what works, doing more of it, seeing what's not working. Like Quora, we turned it down because we didn't see anything from it. Mm. Pinterest turned it down because we have not seen anything from it. But other people I know, like, you know, Bob Lodich loves Pinterest.
Mm-hmm.
Or guest posts. We were doing all these guest posts. And I'm like, man, this is a lot of work for not a great return. And so I think the thing is you have to just make it a routine to try experiments so you'll actually start looking for them.
Yeah, I like that because, I mean, you have these goals and it's like, all right, well, we can't super, you know, control whether we hit these goals or not, but we can identify things that we think can help us get to that goal. And you're talking about these proactive dashboard. I think you call them like these leading indicator goals, right? So that you know at the end of the week, okay, did Dean do this? Like, Dean has to spend $2,500. Did he spend $2,500? Yes or no? If he didn't, why didn't he? And then look at the results from that. I think that's such a, that's something that we, that I think I originally heard from you on your podcast, which we're going to be talking about here shortly.
Oh, thanks, dude.
That I heard on your show, and I was like, oh, that's really smart. I want to incorporate that into mine. So we started to do that ourselves, where each person, I mean, my team just basically doubled in size in the past 2 weeks. on a day-to-day basis. So they have a lot of, I'm working with them right now on setting up this proactive dashboard and having these leading indicator goals. So each person is responsible for one thing. I mean, there's an overarching goal, like podcast downloads, for example. But here are the things that we can try to do, that we think are going to get us there.
Well, yeah, I think, you know, cause I'll tell you, I think I said it in my podcast, it felt like I was playing a game I couldn't win.
Yeah.
And a lot of the metrics that we look at are, it's already after the fact. It's like, how much did I spend, right? It's like, that happens after. But how many things I can control, like I can control experiments. I can control trying one new ad channel a week. Or for like our advertising, the full-time person at sumo.com, she is responsible for 5 A-B tests on our ads each week. And she's responsible for 5 ad sets each week. So okay. It's part of her process and she's forced, and then she has to say, not forced in a negative sense.
Right.
It's basically encouraging her to do these activities that'll create bigger results for us by things that we can control.
Yeah, I love that. And then you're revisiting at the end, don't you guys meet on Mondays?
We meet every Monday. So for example, here's another one I think you'll like, and it's relevant for a lot of people buying traffic. So we're growing on my hobby, my personal stuff, which is my YouTube. Mm-hmm. We have Brandon, he's our editor, he's awesome. He's responsible for one thumbnail refresh a week and one video test a week. I don't care what he does.
Yeah.
But it has to tie towards our goal. So our goal, we're finalizing it for 2018, but it'll probably be either watch time or subscribers.
Yeah.
And as long as they have a clear goal, then it's like, do whatever you want and do your refresh each week, do your test each week and see how it affects towards our goal.
Yeah. What's the video refresh? What do you mean by that?
So we found, this is stuff we've tried a lot. That's actually, we had other things he used to do and now he doesn't do those anymore because they weren't making a difference. But we found just changing our title and our thumbnail.
Oh, okay.
On older videos.
Yep.
Like gave them significant bumps. Really? In YouTube. Dude, surprisingly, I'll pull up some of the stats so you can see it.
So you're looking at the analytics that are right within YouTube there, looking at it from, okay, you've had this current, you know, title and thumbnail for a certain period of time and then you change it out and just basically see what the difference is.
Yeah, so I'll tell you, but I'm not sharing this externally with too many other people. What we do is we take titles and we make them as Facebook ads, and then we see which one gets the high CTR, and then we use that title on our YouTube.
Interesting.
And like so that one has worked really, really. It's hard because you can't A/B test it from that to the title, besides something more complicated that I'm willing to do right now.
Yeah.
But doing some of these refreshes, I'll send you the example.
Sure.
Doing the refreshes is like, we'll see, we get a big spike because people come in and the plateau is higher.
Okay. Gotcha. I'm glad we were able to talk about that. Cause like I said, I did list that out. I think that's super smart as far as having these leading indicator goals, I know that you guys use, or I don't know if it's changed, but just simple Google Docs. Like you don't need an elaborate system to be able to do this. You just list them out. Did it happen? Did it not? I think you color coordinate it, right? Whether like red is bad, green is good or something like that. And you just revisit it at the end or when you're having your team meetings on Mondays.
So I posted it for you in our chat here so that you can actually see what an example of it looks like.
Okay.
So we've built complicated dashboards. So here's like another, here's more of a complicated one.
Okay.
I'll send you as an example. Basically, it's like pulls in all this data, does all this stuff, da, da, da. And we're actually like, and this is for sumo.com. We're actually going back to just like a Google spreadsheet. Cause I think there's something there. My partner Chad just said it and I like it, which is like, there's something there about actually manually checking something versus just like having things automatically done. Like my finances, I used to work at mint.com and was one of the first people there. I still manually check my finances once a month.
Wait, you don't balance your checkbook, do you?
No, I don't.
Oh, okay. Okay.
I don't really budget or anything like that.
I'm just going to be very impressed if you actually go in there and budget or balance your checkbook.
Dude, who uses a checkbook?
My mom still does. She was
My mom does too.
I was home a few weeks ago and she was like paying a bill. I'm like, what are you doing right now? She's like, oh, I'm setting in my bill. I'm like, Don't you do that online? Oh, no, no, no. Still use the checkbook. One thing, I want to kind of start to wrap up here, but one thing that I should say, another thing that I've been super impressed in, and you've been talking about this for a while now, and really simplifying a marketing plan. Again, I know that you love to do, you know, in Google Docs, again, really keeping it simple, but what are some ways that people can create a marketing plan that's really simplified, you know, breaking it down? And I love how you look at these things and say, okay, what's working and what can I double down on? And then what can I kill after that? You know, what's not working? It's not getting any results. I'm just going to stop doing that.
So it's funny you say that because we just have done that in our business and I can give you concrete examples. The way, and then we're actually, we've re-changed our marketing goal, but the plan is always the same. The strategy of how I set up the plan is always the exact same. So for Sumo.com, we're targeting e-commerce businesses. And that clarity of customer, actually, I'll tell for anyone listening, if you don't have a specific customer you're targeting, do that right now. Just pick one person. Give up everybody else for 6 months, 12 months, and just go hardcore on one. The second thing, though, is have a goal. So for that, we have a certain amount of customers we need to sign up each month. And so let's just keep it simple. Let's say it's 100. I literally, and I can pull it up. Everyone on our team knows it. I go over it every single Monday with our team. And it says, if we need to hit 100, where the hell is that coming from? Mm-hmm. So right now, the 100 should come from our content marketing team, our advertising team, our email marketing, and our platform marketing, like targeting WordPress.
Okay.
And so each of those teams is responsible for a certain amount of those signups. And then every Monday, we just check how they're doing against it. And it just keeps things really straightforward. One new thing I'm implementing that I like and I would encourage people to do is creating one pager strategy docs for how they're going to hit it. Meaning, so let's take our content marketing. He has to do, let's just say, 50 signups this month. Mm-hmm. If he were to die tomorrow, I don't want him to die. I really love Chris. But if he were to get hit by like a giant whale or something eats him, the question becomes like, what was his strategy? And it shouldn't be a ton of pages, but what is your strategy to be able to hit those 50?
Yeah. For the
and
month.
Just write that on a one page.
Got it. So that somebody else could pick that up if necessary.
Exactly. Because I was like, well, if he leaves, I don't know what his real strategy is. And that's right. And especially as you double, triple your team, you get to 10, 20, 40, 50. The biggest thing as businesses grow that I've noticed is the communication goes down because it's hard to know who's doing what and how things are happening.
That's a great point. Tell me about your podcast, man. I started listening to, I want to hear, my understanding is that you wanted to test it out. And you're going to give yourself, I don't know, what do you say, 3-6 months or something like that. And the show is Noah Kagan Presents. And I'm not just telling you this because I'm looking at you face to face and I'm talking to you right now. But your show is one on the short list of episodes of podcasts that you listen to every week.
Thanks,
and this is what happens, though, when I listen to your show. I start listening to it and I go, man, I got it, because I'm always doing something. It's always like going on. Yeah. If I'm like walking or whatever. I'm like, I got to stop. I have to pause this because I have to find something to write down, like write with or take notes with. And it happened with your YouTube episodes recently.
Oh, it's so good.
It was like part one and part two. And I get into it. I was like, man, I can't listen to this now because I need to be super ready to be taking tons of notes because that's how actionable it was. Another recent one that is really, really good is, and I took a note of it too here, How to Grow Your Business to $1 Million and Beyond. And what I love about your approach on there and pretty much exactly how we're talking here is everything's really simplified. You know, it's broken down like this is what, you know, you either have ideas or you're talking to somebody that you brought onto the show and you're sharing what you're doing in your own business and breaking it down and saying like this, go do this. And that's what I mean. Like I've found myself multiple times being like, oh, I got to stop because I have to like, I want to come back to this, take notes, and here I am bringing, you know, taking a big outline that I can bring into my own business and start testing out. So what's it been like for you? Because you've been doing it for a few months now, and this test has, in my view, been a big success for you. But how has it been for you?
Thank you for the compliment, man.
Yeah,
thank
you. Sure.
I think sometimes in business you never really hear anything. You just like put stuff out, and you're like,
yes, yes.
And so I think it's nice. One of my encouragements for people is that if you're ever struggling, just go help one person or go talk to someone you've worked with. And generally you feel better.
Yep.
The rule of one. The other thing too is success is also very relative. Like sometimes I'm like, that guy's killing it, or that woman is making so much money. And then I'm like, you never know.
Yeah.
You never know. So, and it's hard because then I get jealous. I'm like, oh, he's making all this money, but it's like, you know, he's now divorced and other things are bad. Anyways,
right.
Make sure yourself is happy, I think is my encouragement there. It's been, I would say to your audience with the Art of Paid Traffic.
Yeah.
From a marketing perspective, it is the worst marketing channel you could ever do. So think about this. There's, 100% of the people on Earth. How many of them have smartphones? How many of them now have that podcast app? How many of them like choose podcasts? And then how many of them are they actually going to listen to in reality? So like basically you have no one. You know, I think, think about this. One of the top 10 podcasts is Joe Rogan.
Yeah.
How many downloads does he get an episode?
Oh, millions.
It's about 1 million.
Oh, is it really?
1 million.
Million per episode?
Yeah.
That's and less than what I thought it would be. I mean, that's a lot, but it's still less than what I thought.
I mean, he's super famous. He's on TV. He's been on shows, all this stuff. Everyone knows him. And he's one of the top 10. So just to give you context, like that is how small the market is. And then secondly, when you're listening to a podcast, you listen to it when you go for a walk or when you're doing your yoga or whatever, you know, you have it as a part of your day. And there's generally not going to be more time for that. You're probably not going to commute longer. You're going to be at the gym for the 2 hours. So there is a zero-sum game where like, if you want to win someone's attention, you have to take it away from someone else. Hmm. And so what I've noticed with marketing and creating a podcast is a few different things. But number one, it's generally the channel that people are not going to find out about you. So it's where your most loyal customers want to find out more about you.
Mm, yep.
It's not your gateway drug. Your gateway drug is going to be a blog. It's going to be when you're interviewed. It's going to be when you're guest posting. It's going to be when you're tweeting or maybe other things if you're starting out. But I think a lot of people I've heard, like they want to get an audience. They're like, I'm going to start a podcast to get an audience. I'm like, that is not where I would start.
Yeah. It's been good for me. I actually do hear from a lot of people like, I found you recently or I found you, you know, through I don't know, you know, came across and oftentimes I will hear like they'll message me on Facebook. So I'm always curious to find out like, well, how did you find me? You know, like you started listening to the show, like, well, how did that happen?
And what did they say?
You know, a lot of it is just searching on, you know, iTunes, or they hear like just like this, like, oh, you might have people come over from who are listeners of AOPT here, come over to your show because like, oh, I heard you on Rick Mulready's show. Well, that happens to me a lot as well. And, you know, so obviously, I mean, you obviously know this, but the more that you can be on other shows, I think it helps too, honestly, with the, like, and I don't have any proof to this. Maybe you know about this, but I think that there's something to, you being on other podcasts that does help with the Apple algorithm of the rating of your own show. I don't have any proof to that, but I don't know. It's just, maybe a conspiracy theory that I think.
Well, here's I'm not disagreeing with that. And I do think people probably have found you or found me.
Yeah.
I think in terms of lessons and takeaways for other people experimenting with podcasts or thinking about it, number one, with marketing, what you want to do in marketing is you want to be able to do an activity and see a result. And for the most part with marketing, I feel like with podcasts, I do a bunch of things and I never see any, I can't tell. I don't know if you notice that yourself. Like, yeah. I'll email my mailing list. I have 150,000 people on my mailing list. I email them saying, go check out this podcast. And the downloads number doesn't change.
Yeah.
So that could also be that my audience hates me. You know, they don't like me whatsoever, which is, it's totally possible.
Could be, but unlikely.
But my point, though, is that, like, I think that's not where I want to spend time, where it's, like, mystery. Like, I don't want this, like, I do stuff and I'm not sure the outcome.
Sure.
Number two, I think you have to figure out your niche or your angle. Yeah. So there's a lot of interview shows. There's a lot of different shows. I think you have to think about what is your angle and what's already working. So what is working is NPR. They own 8 or 9 out of the top 10.
Yep.
Them are like one of their subsidiaries or some spinoff of them or someone who used to work for them. So I think more people need to think about they're the best. And why don't I try to do things that they're doing, which is shorter. Almost all their shows are less than 30 minutes.
Yep.
And most of their shows are story based.
Yeah.
And so that's something that I've tried to get better at, which is just like if my shows, like most of my shows now are 20 minutes and they are normally edited for between 5 to 15 hours. Like it's an insane amount of editing that we do now on these episodes.
I was going to ask you about that. Did you have to find like a specialty type of editor to do that?
So, well, what happened, what I originally thought would happen was that it would be really easy and it would grow really fast. And I had a goal, 100,000 downloads an episode. Mm-hmm. And then I've been stuck, which every business gets stuck.
Sure.
That's part of the, if you can get through the stuck, then you win. It's kind of the way I look at it.
Yep.
And I've been stuck around, like, I think 20,000 an episode. And it's great. And I still feel very fortunate. And I'm, like, happy that people listen to it. And I think the key thing with that is that I enjoy it.
Yeah.
Like, I actually enjoy it. Like, even if no one listened or if no, I made no money, which I don't make any money with it, it still, like, isn't a fun thing. So I think the key thing overall with me is obviously look at what works in marketing, which for me, the only thing with podcasts has been getting people on my mailing list to find out about it. So I have it in my autoresponder or getting on other shows. And secondly, how to make it sustainable. So how do I do this for the next 5 years?
Yep.
And I think in the beginning, I started doing all these shows that were not sustainable, nor were there something I could really do on a, you know, reasonable basis for a long period of time.
Mm. And I want to kind of finish up this point here, and we'll wrap up here in a minute. But you do a really good job of taking episodes that you do on the podcast and repurposing that content on your YouTube channel. And I don't remember the guy's name, but I know that you, the name of the episode here is How to 2X Your Business This Year, Lessons from Buying 29 Companies. I think it's a buddy of yours. I don't remember the guy's name. But then you did, and I listened to that episode, but then I saw a video pop up on your YouTube channel where you talked about, I think it was like his hiring grid. And it was just a cool little short little video that was like a clip from the podcast, but it was teaching this one point that he was trying to make. So you're leveraging the content. You're re-leveraging the content based on from the podcast onto other channels that you have.
Yeah, we call it content multiplication. So let me finish the editing thing. I'll give everyone a software. I use Trint.com. It's I don't know if you, is that what you recommend?
Yeah, yeah. I learned it from you. I checked it out. It's like Trint. Great.
Dude, it's $12 an hour. And so we take all of our podcasts and then I try to just pick. It's even when, one thing I did that was really helpful is I used to do these shows. And I'd have 20 questions. And if I was talking to Rick, I'd be like, Rick Moretti, here's your 20 questions, go in order. Now I only pick three.
Mm.
And every show, I just go take those three and then we go on wild tangents, but it stays to those three themes. Because I think people generally will take, as you said, like a few major takeaways from different things.
Sure, sure.
So, and then in terms of editing, we basically created a template where we get the Trint outline and then we write out the intro, the outro, the three major takeaways. And then we basically go through, and this is actually, I don't know if you do this, but what I do is that I listen to the episode and I read the outline and then I bold the parts that I paid attention to.
That you paid attention to while you were listening?
Yeah.
Okay.
So I'm listening to it and then there's parts that I'm like, oh, keep going. Oh, and then I'll delete everything else in the show.
Oh, okay. Okay.
And so the whole show now, if you see, it's only 20 minutes. That's after it's like an hour and a half talk.
Yeah.
Because really there's only like 20 minutes of like, oh,
yeah,
oh,
I like that.
And then so cut the rest of the fat out. And so and then I've done that enough times that I pass it off to someone now who does that instead of me.
Gotcha.
And so that's what I found. And I think in all aspects, it's like what's actually the most important parts.
Yep.
And really just showcasing those.
Now, again, this is a selfish question. Was this a specialty type of editor?
Oh, no, not at all. So I had an audio editor who was doing Tim Ferriss's show.
Yeah.
And a lot of times an audio editor is really looking for the audio. Like I would do a show and I'd be like, dude, that was garbage. And he's like, that was a great show. But he's only measuring it by the audio quality.
Oh, okay. Right.
And there's nothing wrong with him. And so here's what I would recommend. Find someone that listens to your show and can give you straight feedback about it. Mm. And this is what the NPR guy did for me. Have them listen to your show and then do timestamps.
Yep.
When they paid attention.
I like it. Okay.
Or you do. And so what I would, if I were you, I would actually do it with your own show. Like here are the timestamps. And then now you have enough of those episodes. When you find someone, you're like, this is how I like to do it.
Mm.
So I've passed it off recently to David and he did a few of the episodes and I love David. He's like literally my favorite person, right hand man. He's amazing for me. And he's actually in San Diego with you.
Oh, is he really? Okay.
And you should meet him actually, because he can talk to you about our process. I'll put you in touch after the show.
Okay, cool.
And let me take a note to do that. And so what David was doing, he was making them almost too meaty, like too. He would cut the fat out of every. It was just no fat.
Okay.
And you need a little bit of fat, man. That's like when you eat a steak. You know, you got to stink that little fat in.
Right. The story. That's part of the storytelling.
Yeah, it's like you have some joke. So not all of it, but a little bit of the fat.
Yeah.
And with David, what he did is he edited one, and he got a Trint transcript, edited it, And then I left comments about what I would have changed so that he can start. So I did that for two episodes. And then he can understand, like, you know, we could find that middle ground.
Sure. Sure. I love it. I want everybody to go check out your podcast, Noah Kagan Presents.
Oh, dude, thanks,
your
man.
YouTube channel. Is it just Noah Kagan on YouTube?
Yeah, to the content multiplication, just to wrap that thought for everyone.
Yeah.
So the content multiplication, the idea is, like, what I was doing for the first, like, few months of the year is I'd create a separate video and a separate podcast and a separate blog post and then a separate social media. And so now David organized all of it. We have basically everything. The podcast was our number one goal as my hobby this year.
Yep.
So we create a podcast. Then from that, I'll take the content and make a video, or our video editor will take it and make a video.
Gotcha.
From there, we send the transcript to a writer who writes I don't like show notes. I think show notes are shit because no one reads them.
Yep.
So he actually creates a standalone article that even if you never listen to anything, you can digest it and it's still something you would share.
Sure.
Then that article goes to another guy who creates all the social media stuff for it. So all the postings on LinkedIn or Twitter or Facebook.
Yep.
So basically just like a checklist that we go through. But I think what most people do is they take a shitty video and make it into a shitty podcast and make it a shitty show note article and then have a crappy image. And I think you have to cater to the medium. So if it's a video, like, how do those like to be digested versus an audio is going to be different.
Yeah. Now, when you do the video real quick, let's just say you have a 20-minute podcast episode. That video, though, is only a couple of minutes, right? Are you just really condensing down to the major points, or what does that look like for you?
So we've experimented with two things. We used Fiverr.com and we used GoAnimate.com to create those videos.
Okay.
What I'm noticing is that it depends on your goal, but YouTube's goal is to get people to spend their whole day watching videos.
Sure.
So if you're trying to grow your exposure on YouTube, you have to give them what they want so you get what you want. And what they want is long videos. Why? Because the longer they're there, the longer they're watching, the more YouTube gets their ad revenue and that they win. They beat Facebook. So what I'm moving towards more on my YouTube channel is taking longer segments. So at least 10 minutes.
Yep.
And obviously it has to be mostly good, but basically take my 10 favorite minutes of the podcast or 2 5-minute parts and make that the animated video or just me talking about it.
Yeah.
And then adding in some video edits around that.
Cool. I love it. Dude, this has been really good. I mean, you've really just sort of peeled back the curtain on a lot of the stuff that you're doing.
Yeah, I shared some things I haven't shared publicly.
I really appreciate that. And I know this is really, really going to be well received by AOPT Nation here. I'm trying to get that to stick. I don't know if it's going to stick. AOPT Nation.
What do you think about that? Do you like that?
I like it. I mean, I like the acronym of, you know, for AOPT. But I used that the other day on an interview. They're like, what? What did you say? Like, well, you know, I'm working on it, trying to get it to stick. So so Noah Kagan Presents, okdork.com.
Dude,
where else can people connect with you, man?
Well, number one or two, check out our businesses, appsumo.com, Groupon for Geeks, or sumo.com, free tools to grow your email list. And then me, I didn't get enough attention in high school, so that's why I do all this stuff. but basically, okay, Noah Kagan Presents podcast, Noah Kagan YouTube, or okdork.com if you like reading.
Yeah, they're really good articles, and your articles are meaty in there, meaning like there is like, if you're going to go there, be ready to learn stuff, and they're actionable. It's like, all right, here's the like step-by-step how to do whatever it is that you're talking about. So I will link everything up here in that show notes page that no one's going to go to for today's episode. Noah, I really appreciate you coming on here.
Dude, thank you for having me, brother. I'll see you. I'll be there in November, so you're going to get... No, I'm gonna
oh,
hit
nice.
You up.
Okay, sounds good, brother. All right. Hope this talk here with Noah was really helpful for you. If you're interested in creating a business around managing Facebook ads for other businesses, I've got some really helpful content both available for you right now, and I've got some live online trainings coming up starting on November 13th. I've been doing a bunch of Facebook lives over on my Facebook page, talking about a bunch of different topics related to creating and growing a Facebook ads business. And you can check those out over on my Facebook page, which you can get to by simply going to rickmulready.com/Facebook page. I'm going to be continuing to do these Facebook lives over the next couple of weeks. And also stay tuned for more details on how to register for one of the 3 free live online trainings coming up on November 13th and 14th. So thank you so much, my friends, for hanging out with me today. Really appreciate the fact that you are giving me your attention. Coming up next week, I've got a Facebook ads case study for you with a listener
of the podcast here. His name is Nick Wolny, and he's been using what he learns here on the show to get some incredible results for boutique fitness and yoga studios in the Houston, Texas area. We're going to break down two campaigns specifically, one where he generated $15,000 in class sales on a Facebook ad spend of $50, literally, and another campaign where he generated over $58,000 in revenue for the studio and on an ad spend of just $330. So all that is coming up in the next episode. So until then, as always, keep testing your paid traffic to find out what works for you and your business, and then do more of what's working. And I'll see you in the next episode.
Do you want to avoid the seven biggest mistakes that burn through course creators' ad money? I see these over and over and over again, and I put them together in a mini email series. This is not fluff. Each of the seven mistakes, I also have a recorded video tutorial showing you inside of Facebook Ad Manager how to fix those mistakes. This is good, solid, and it will save you money or help you make more money with your Facebook ads. Click down in the show notes below. You'll see the link and you can go download it right now for free.